Hello and welcome to another episode of the Magician's Call podcast. We have another great episode for you. In this episode, we will join Lance Allred and Dr. Lahab El-Samrai, who will discuss The Magician in Action. It's a great episode and we can't wait for you to hear it. If you want to support the IFC's Magician's Call podcast, make sure to rate the podcast 5 stars on iTunes and wherever you get your podcast. So without any further ado, Dr. El-Samrai, take it away.
Welcome back to another episode of The Magician's Call. I'm Dr. Lahab El-Samrai, and this is Lance Allred, and we are The Magician's Call. We're sponsored by our sponsor, the Jam Training Institute. So at the Jam Training Institute, we take on students, teach them how to use JAMP and to be proficient in the JAMP treatment. Anyway, without further ado, Lance, how you doing, bro?
I'm doing well, friend. It's good to be back. Thanks for letting me have the week off last week to celebrate my birthday and all that. And let's get back at it today.
Yeah, happy birthday. You're back after your birthday. You went to the hot springs and you went for a soak. That was nice. What were your thoughts on the past week as you celebrated a birthday? What type of reflections did you have?
Well, it was interesting. So I turned 41 and my jersey number was number 41. Mm. And I based that on a song from Dave Matthews Band, a song called Number 41. With my hearing as a kid, I had the older analog hearing aids.
And your face is cut off, right? Okay, there you go.
All yeah,
right.
Sorry. I'm just
that's okay.
That.
That's okay.
As a kid, I had the old analog hearing aids and I couldn't really hear lyrics. And so I would have to read them. And when I first pulled out number 41, I had this moment of profound, whatever, prophecy or whatever you want to call it, where there was a lyric that said, I will go in this way and I will find my own way out. And that's why I chose the number 41. And so now I just turned 41. And so I sat with that and I have felt, you know, obviously we don't want to move into entitlement or expectation, but turning 41 is interesting that the energy around me and in my space and in my heart is very neutral. That I'm not saying things are getting easier at the moment, but as I am positioning myself to maneuver and bring some things into manifestation, I'm not irritated or bothered by people. They can keep playing the games, but I'm no longer taking it personally. And so it's interesting as I move into the age of 41, which was again my jersey number, that I have this energy of I'm no longer emotionally attached to these outcomes, that people can continue to play whatever games and I know I will outlast them.
Ooh.
Because that's so much of what the lyric was. I will go in this way and I will find my own way out. And I think that's a pretty profound space for me to be in, as I have been chasing these dreams and visions as the magician and feeling like it's personal, that I have this duty or this responsibility, and if things aren't happening immediately, I'm doing something wrong. But now there's almost, when you're in neutrality, there's almost a trust that everything is as it should be and everything will be in its own perfect time. So those are the thoughts that really sat with me as I soaked in the hot spring on my 41st birthday.
Ooh. Deep, yeah. Reflecting back to meaning in one's life. The alchemist goes back in time to look at the gold, right?
Absolutely. And
so you are time traveling, traveling back into the past to see all the gold that brought you to this point, mm-hmm. of transformation. Mm-hmm. And you were recounting steps of your transformation and what it looks like and mm-hmm. how it feels like to everybody. You're telling me, well, it used to matter, what doesn't matter anymore, what's really important and what's not that important anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very valuable for people to kind of reflect on.
I would say that's one of the real things I appreciate about my birthday. It's not so much, let's get everyone together and throw a party. Well, one, February 2nd is literally the middle day of winter. Ain't nobody got the time or the energy to throw a big party when the sun sets at 5 p.m. You know what I'm saying? But
it's next more year, I'm going to throw you a party on that day. That's the plan. Since nobody has done that for you, next year I will do that for you.
But I think he hit the nail on the head of finding gold in my experiences. As I look back, and I think everyone should develop the skill where they can close their eyes and in 90 seconds or less, replay their life as a movie trailer.
Ooh.
It's a very powerful, quick meditative process.
Ooh.
Where you can look back in awe and see the arc and the highs and lows and how a trailer hooks people in to want to see more. But when you allow yourself to view it outside, and this is why I also tell people, always write your own autobiography, not with the pressure that it has to be published, but for yourself and to have awe for your own arc. But being able to look back, especially on your birthday, and you really sit into it like a 5-minute trailer, and you see the highs and the lows and the arcs. And this time, really, especially, there wasn't like, if only I had invested or held on to my MBA money in 2008 and not invested it in real estate before the subprime mortgage fiasco, because I thought I was being smart. Mm. I thought I was being a responsible adult. I was doing what all the rules told me to do, and I still got my ass kicked. Mm. Instead, it wasn't like, if only I had held on to the possessions. It was seeing all of those highs and those lows as the alchemical benchmarks themselves. And it was quite the powerful experience on my 41st birthday to look back and see them. And as we've said before in previous discussions, is that I barely even recognize that person anymore who was 27, who was 35, but seeing that they will always be a part of me, but their perception of themselves was frankly quite limited in who I have and who I will continue to unfold into being in my arc.
So the expansion of consciousness is what you're reflecting on, how your consciousness is expanding as you transform from last year to this year to next year, yeah. to the year after. And what you're reflecting back on is the idea, what things used to look like.
Yeah.
And what do they look like now?
Mm-hmm. Here's a profound one. So I have this vision of a hot springs that you know about that I've been chasing, because I've always, whether it was playing basketball or speaking on a stage or at hot springs, I saw these things in black and white. And as I have been working on finding the right investment partners, whatever, for the exorbitant price that the sellers are holding for it, a king's ransom, it was so personal to me. Because I realized there was still the child in me. The child archetype was very strong, that when we left Montana when I was 7 years old, that's when I was put into the big bad world, leaving the wilderness behind. I felt very vulnerable and exposed, and I wanted to get back. And so the last 6 years that I've been playing poker with these sellers, I would get really emotionally attached.
Ooh.
I was not playing poker very well. But now, with last year's transformation being what it was, losing my father and understanding and seeing clarity, so much of my energy to be successful, to be seen, was really for my parents to be seen and recognized. But now that my father is gone, there's nothing left for me to fix. And so that really allows me to then have frank conversations with my own child, my own inner child, my child archetype, and say, it is just us now. And I got your back.
And why don't you talk about your vision for this place?
Say what?
Why don't you talk about your vision for this place? I think some people would be interested in to see what your vision of this treatment center would look like.
Yeah. So what I had seen, as a child, when I was 7 years old, I began having recurring black and white dreams of this hot springs called Sleeping Child Hot Springs, where my father built the old fiveplex. He laid the pool as a construction worker, and it used to be a community swimming area in the Bitterroot Valley of Montana. And after we left Montana, moved to Utah, I began having black and white dreams of it. But they were me in the future. And I remember wearing a plaid shirt, and I would see it in my dreams. And I was black and white. I'd get out of a car, and there was a big castle there, and I knew where it was home. I just knew, this is my home. Okay, whatever that meant. But when I retired from basketball and I was transitioning into his public speaking career, business coaching, et cetera, Sleeping Child Hot Springs, which had been bought and privatized in 1993 by a Vegas tycoon, taken away from the community, and he slapped up his own 6-foot story chalet, a tower, a castle on it, and would have his own gambling parties up there, but he was eventually killed for gambling debts. And now it was purchased by two separate families. And then in 2016, around the time that I retired from basketball, this property, Sleeping Child, was finally put on the market for sale. And I looked at it, I'm like, oh, that's exactly what I saw in my dream, that chalet, that castle. Ooh. And so what I saw for it at first was, okay, one, this is a sacred space. On the other side of the portal, I see a pyramid, that these hot springs, the Native Americans, hot springs is how Mother Earth breathes. It is a sacred womb. And these are sacred portals. And so I see the pyramid on the other side of it. And there's a lot of sacred things that have happened here, but there's also a lot of trauma that has happened in these sacred places. Mm. And there are other things that I can't really, as I've run retreats there, testing and filling the place out, some very interesting otherworldly things have happened that are too sacred for me to share, but let's just say messages were relayed to guests that were then given to me that they had no idea what the heck they were saying, but they were given to me and I understood them completely. Mm. And so in my limited lens though, I was thinking, okay, I have to procure this and make it an awesome retreat center. People can come do holistic retreats, whatever, but most importantly, I want to open up the pool to the community again, have an extension for a community pool, but the Native Americans swim for free, all the elders swim for free. Any member of the tribe just has to bring a gift, et cetera, et cetera. But as I have been working on presenting the idea, it was not able to catch any traction with bottom line investors who only see the dollar signs. But at first I kept thinking, oh, there's something wrong with the business model. And there was, but more importantly, there are initiations that one has to go through in order to become actual stewards of places like this. And so as I lost my father, one thing led to another, and I finally had the realization, oh, wait, this tower is a perfect model for an addiction recovery center, because I don't care about the tower. I care about the land. I was almost like, I wish the tower would burn down, because everyone keeps trying to say the values in the tower, and I don't care about the tower. But realizing the tower itself is perfect for the addiction recovery model, and that will sustain everything else, as I can run retreats, but also have another area for the community pool, but have sun dances and sweat lodge with my Native American friendships. And there can always be one bedroom open for a scholarship from someone for a Native American community that needs help with addiction recovery. And all the proceeds of Native Americans, when they bring a gift to just swim in the pool, those 100% of those goes to funding the scholarships and many other things. And why have I been so after? I remember my brother, I love my brother dearly, but he's like, what's, to use his language, what's your heart on with the place? And all I could tell him was, I promise it's not about me. Mm-hmm. And that if it was about me, I would have given up a long time ago. I'm just doing what I am being asked to do. And going to show that I've been doing this dance for 6 years, that it's been a long initiation, that if it was supposed to be bought up by someone else, it would, but no one else can actually, quote, see it for what it actually is. And that's a good thing. And so now realizing, okay, the addiction recovery model allows me to also not have to be the one to be in the center of it, to make it about me or whatever. The addiction recovery center will be the one that subsidizes the place, and I can actually go invisible and just be a steward in the back and let other people shine and do their thing. And also not have to be the one to protect it, meaning no alcohol, no drugs here. But if there's an addiction recovery center and people are already there for therapy, people are going to respect that, and they're not going to bring recreational drugs onto the property. So it doesn't have to be the Lance show. It doesn't have to be about me. It really just allows me to be a bridge and show up where I need to show up and let the land do its own healing. Because all the retreats I've run there, I tell people, if you're brave enough to have a conversation with the water, she will show you incredible things. And they'll be painful. And a part of you will die. But another part of you will be reborn after this weekend. And she's a harsh mistress. She's a cruel mistress. But if you're brave enough to step into that phoenix energy of Sleeping Child Hot Springs, it just allows me to be a bridge. My job is just to get people to this place. It's not my job to save people or give them the right peyote combination or whatever. Just my job to orient them and help them have an honest conversation with the water, which is them having a conversation with themselves and the universe.
It sounds like you have a real passion for...
It's what keeps me awake for the last 6 years of my life.
Yeah. It sounds like you've thought about this over and over again. You've taken it in different directions. So that
goes to the point that I think we talked about in our first episode, was that manifestation is grit. That it's being willing to be flexible and adaptable, that you have a vision, but you also have to be flexible enough to let the route and path change as it becomes more clear. That you can still hold the vision, but be amenable to having to take different routes or diversions or whatnot. And it doesn't mean the vision is wrong. It just means you have to go back and work on the blueprint to how you're actually going to make it happen. I've been told over 300 times on this property. But instead of thinking, oh, it's a bad idea, it really is, okay, one, the final message isn't attuned yet, but two, I haven't found the right people that are going to help this place come alive.
Ooh.
And creation, that's something that people don't understand.
Creation takes time.
Yes.
And I think that's part of it. Part of it is that the people who will help will come around.
Oh, yeah. And that's a big part, too. Not only have I had to move out of being emotionally attached, the child wanting to be back in the water, wanting to be back in the wilderness to feel safe, I have had to let that go, which allows me to be a better negotiator and have healthier boundaries as I do move into stewardship.
Ooh.
But also the right people like yourself and Ron, who are certified clinicians that deal with trauma, that deal with addiction, that also are in alignment with my passion and my connections with the land, with the Native American tribes, and aren't bottom line money people. So instead of becoming indebted to cold bottom line people where the integrity will be compromised, obviously there was this energy of the space protecting itself and saying it's not time yet, because you have to allow, and this is part of the law of attraction, it's not just manifesting something materially, it's also attracting people of the same vibration as you.
I really think it's a vision of healing for the future, where the community is welcome to help heal the individuals in the community. I don't think we heal outside the community. I think healing is a community-based issue.
It is.
We're not separate. We're not pieces that are separate from the group. What Jung says is that you cannot individuate outside the group. You have to individuate within the group.
Mm-hmm.
True individuation only occurs if I can become whole while I am connected. True individuation does not happen while I am disconnected.
Right. That's a profound point, and that goes into what I see is, imagine the power, Laha, of you or me or other people being able to run a weekend retreat in archetypes or creative writing or anything at the retreat space above the recovery center in the canyon. But then people who are in recovery have a free door open to come up and join us at the retreat anytime. They can actually feel included, that they can integrate with others, that they can see other people who are stepping into their own self-actualization and healthy individuation, as you just said, within a group or collective setting, giving these people who are at rock bottom in their addiction recovery some role models. Because it's hard for someone who's at rock bottom to look at you and say, well, Lahab is so far ahead of it. He has his degree. Everything's put together. Not that it can't be you, but sometimes they can put you on a pedestal and say, why even try? But if they can connect with people who are just coming into a retreat on their own free will, of their own volition, who are stepping into their own, again, self-actualization, those become strong mentorship opportunities for people to connect with people in addiction therapy. And we're not going to call it addiction therapy. We're going to call it trauma recovery. That's really what it is. It's trauma, the trauma, the wounded archetypes that have really just taken the gauntlet and run with it, that really they're running the whole show in their trauma and getting people to step out of that. That's really the main heart of what you and I are about when we talk about addiction.
Yeah, I think healing only occurs if the community is willing and provides a space for it to happen. And I think that's exactly what you're saying. You're saying that this space is sacred, that this water, this land, that this healing that occurs with the foundation of the first peoples who were here as part of it, makes it something more than just a recovery. It's more than just recoveries.
It's more than a recovery center. It's more than Lance Allred. There's so many things. It's a bigger thing.
Yeah.
Really, if this place is amplified and sacred waters, sacred portals are amplifying, just, I call it the zone or the field. Ooh. But you know, when the athlete's on fire, he's in the zone. He's no longer in logical mind where he's overthinking. He just is. He's being. He's flowing with what is. That these kind of spaces really shut off the obsessive logical mind and allow you to just reconnect with Ooh. Mother Earth. And that amplifies so much expansion that how could I even want to get in the way of something like that and make it about me or make it about a simple addiction recovery center? That these things, as you know, I may have an idea of what I see it being, but again, I have to have maturity, put in the child archetype at my side, not shutting him down, but holding his hand and saying, and it will very likely take on a life of its own and become something very different or possibly even bigger than we ever imagined.
Ooh.
And I don't get to control that. That's not my right.
Ooh.
My job is just to show up where I'm asked. And as I was asked in those black and white visions, I didn't like basketball as a kid. Why am I seeing images of myself playing basketball? That's stupid. Why would I be on a stage speaking to people, thousands of people? I have a speech impediment. That's terrifying to me. Okay, but I guess I have to do it. And so these visions have come true, and all I can do is step into them and do what I'm asked to do. And like the beautiful book, The Once and Future King, when Arthur builds Camelot, why wasn't he told of the heartbreak that would happen? That wasn't what he was supposed to see. He was just asked to build Camelot and not try to control it. And that's a big call. And this last year especially has prepared me to be in such a way that I'm not in a reactive fear child state where I'm trying to control everything, but simply be a steward and hold the space and allow other people in their collective skills and brilliance and genius to amplify the space as it is needed, as it continues to evolve.
Ooh, not our usual discussion, but I think one that is important, that gives background to who and what we are and where we see things in the world and how we see things. I think it's important to connect at that level.
I believe so, but also we've been talking about theory or abstract of what the magician is, but now we're actually talking about it in application.
Ooh, yeah, for sure.
That we're showing this is how the magician actually operates.
Yeah.
That the child in me wants to do it all myself. I have to get all the money. I have to hit a home run with cryptocurrency and have all the money to make it happen. And then if it doesn't happen, oh my gosh, I'm not worthy. I did something wrong.
Yeah.
But I have been forced to put that to the side and understand something that this vision is so Aquarian. And I myself am an Aquarius. Of course, it would happen in a very Aquarian way. That for me to have such a collective vision, a healthy utopian dream, while my grandfather had his utopian dream in the Bitterroot Valley there at Pinesdale, it still had religious tribalism. This is not that this is a space of trauma healing where there is no real tribalism as far as scarcity, fear-based survivalism, but more of we are here to help humanity move out of trauma fractals, where we move out of divisive tribalism. And so I see, again, that's a generational pattern, a generational fractal that in itself is a beautiful story. But wanting to do it all by myself is what caused my grandfather to become compromised.
Ooh.
His dream. Because at the end of the day, it still was him. He was the prophet.
Ooh.
And honoring him, not shaming my grandfather, but honoring him and say, thank you for the lesson that I can now apply. Ooh. And understand it doesn't get to be about me. That's how you bring a Camelot into this world.
I'm really enjoying this conversation on multiple levels. I think I really liked what you're talking about in terms of application of what the magician should do, and how we've been talking about theory, which we have. We've been talking about the stars and the moons and the lights, and this is more the earth, the ground, the water. Yeah.
It is.
Fire. Yeah. And this is, it's very apropos for the moment in time that we live in.
Yes. It is the funneling. This is, again, you can see the stars and the moon. The magician can make things levitate all around them, and that's great, but eventually you have to funnel it down and ground it.
Ooh.
And this is how you do it, that metaphorically speaking, it's okay. I have a vision. I have things. I have skills. I have my own funds of knowledge that I bring to the table. But then I have to find the other magician who has the skill of the day-to-day operation. I have the other magician who has the skill of the finances. I have the other magician, so on and so on.
Mm.
Of finding all the right people and the timing of it, that there are government grants and resources out there too, that again, if I do all this above board, not moving in scarcity, but in transparency, there's a way that then will allow me to move all of this into a conservation trust, protecting it so it can no longer be exploited or taken away from the community ever again, even after I die. But that's what the magician does. You have to see all these moving parts, and there's such a fine line of balancing versus controlling. That can I be flexible and clever enough to balance it all, but not control it? I would say that's a trick that I have really been learning to step into. Because balancing allows you to be flexible. Controlling is you take your eye and you start obsessing about one thing, and then you drop all the other balls that you're juggling.
Fascinating. I think this is a very timely conversation. I think it's important for people to start talking about what they are actually going to do and how are they going to implement change and what they think change should look like and how we should approach it. I think we delved into different aspects of that, how it should happen, how it would happen, how theoretically it would function, how theoretically it would serve the purposes of the vision of healing. And I think that's what we're talking about, is a vision of healing. How would we implement the vision of healing? And we got very practical about implementing that vision of healing.
I think an important thing from just my own recent experience is asking yourself, which archetype wants it the most within you?
Ooh.
And if it's one of the survivor archetypes, or the fifth survivor, in my opinion, is the addict. Then it will not only, if it does get off the ground, it will crash and burn. And this is not to say that the dream can't happen, But for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, something for something, that it will very likely have to be that you will have to let go and sacrifice that archetype, or at least that archetype's desire, and allow the other empowered archetypes within you to take the wheel. So it's always good to ask yourself, because you know what, when I was so frustrated, and I had a lot of nights when I was so, thought I was so close and it all fell through, I wept and I felt like I failed and I lost it. But that it was the child archetype thinking it's all done, it's gone. I lost it. And realizing that has to be alchemized and allow the magician, allow the athlete, allow other people to step in and begin to facilitate all this. All right. I am getting a cue. Hold on one second here.
Yeah, no worries. No worries. So so as Lance is speaking about how his vision, what his vision looks like and how to implement his vision, I think that we have reached the end of our podcast for today. And we've discussed many things today. I think a lot of them very poignant to the time that we live in. Can we implement change? Can we be the radical change that needs to be? And that is our vision that we can be the radical change that is needed during this time. My name is Dr. Lahav El Samurai. This is Lance Allred. We are the Magician's Call, and we will catch up with all of you next week.
Thank you for tuning to this episode of the Magician's Call. We hope you enjoyed hearing from Dr. El Samurai and Lance. We hope you will continue to join us on this journey throughout the series. If you enjoy the IFC's Magician's Call podcast, make sure to rate the podcast 5 stars on iTunes and wherever you get your podcast. You could also find us on the IFC YouTube. See you again for another episode soon.